Southern FM. The sounds of the Bayside.
This is The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. On last week's The Space Show, we related how India had orbited a satellite, then, 2 months later, destroyed it by firing a ballistic missile at it. We brought you some of the Indian Space Research Organization's live commentary of the launch of a satellite called MicroSat-R. We also had comments by NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine, who criticized the destruction of the satellite. Now, our program ended with this opinion piece on the Indian television channel called World is One News.
The United States likes the idea of being a superpower. Who wouldn't? It enjoys dominating geopolitics, determining the worth of sovereign states and their systems of governance, and leveraging its heft on multilateral fora. But naturally, this pride extends to its achievements in space as well. So great was this American desire to extend its supremacy beyond Earth that it spawned the space race of the 1950s. A post-Cold War competition with the Soviet Union to reign supreme in the cosmos, but also for ideological ascendancy over communism. But that was more than five decades ago. Now the US has new competition. And surprise, surprise, they're not from the Occident. We're talking about the new kids on the block, like India, proving to be anything but a pushover. We won't hark back to longer than a week ago, when India joined the US, Russia and China to possess strategic anti-satellite capability. It was another shining moment for India's young but robust space program. And it probably caught the US off guard. That's the only way to explain this comment from NASA's administrator.
Here's what we know about the most recent direct ascent anti-satellite test that was done by India. We know that we have identified 400 pieces of orbital debris from that one event. That is a terrible, terrible thing to create an event that sends debris in an apogee that goes above the International Space Station. And that kind of activity is not compatible with the future of human spaceflight that we need to see have happen.
Terrible, terrible, he says. So let's get this right. Mr. Bridenstine talks about 400 pieces of orbital debris from India's test, of which 60 pieces are trackable, of which 24 were identified above the International Space Station. But here's the crux of his assessment. Despite the increased risk, the astronauts are still safe. And the ISS, the International Space Station, will be maneuvered to avoid the debris if needed. It's unlikely that will be necessary. Let's also put some facts straight. In February 2008, the US used a missile to destroy a bus-sized satellite 247 kilometers above the ocean, the surface of the Earth. The aim was to destroy its onboard tank of toxic fuel, which could have had potential health hazards on hitting Earth. As expected, the satellite's destruction released debris and not petals to the atmosphere. In the interest of facts, let's also tell you that former ISRO scientist Professor V.S. Rajan told VEON that India used the very same orbit as the US did in 2008 for its ASAT test.
India has chosen the more or less the same orbit which US did on US-193 in February 2008. The same 250 kilometers. It's very tough to do it there, but it will go off in a few weeks.
That's not all.
On this evening's The Space Show, we will bring you the results of our fact-checking of the claims by the Indian government, by Jim Bridenstine, and by Wyon TV. We also check out what is the state of the play in Australia's space situational awareness. Now, often referred to as SSA, this is the ability to track objects in orbit around the Earth and to project their future trajectories. Such projections can allow one to foresee potential satellite collisions and to calculate when debris will re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. Now, the commentary we heard there from Wildis One News, and now we do some fact-checking on that. The USA-193 satellite was a United States Department of Defense satellite launched by a Delta II rocket on 2006, December the 14th. It had the international designation 2006-057A. It was a radar imaging satellite called NROL-21, built for the National Reconnaissance Office of the United States. Measuring some 5 meters by 8 meters at launch, it deployed solar panels and a radar antenna to the size of 30 meters by 15 meters. The satellite had a mass of 2,200 kilograms. Now, NROL-21 malfunctioned shortly after launch. The atmospheric drag soon reduced the orbital altitude. It quickly became apparent that the satellite would re-enter the atmosphere early in 2008. By mid-February of 2008, its orbit had decayed to an apogee of 261 kilometres and a perigee of 244 kilometres. On 2008, February 21st, a modified SM-3 missile was fired from the United States ship Lake Erie, which was near Hawaii. The Defense Department missile hit the USA-193 and fragmented it into 174 publicly trackable objects. I say publicly because U.S. Spacecom maintains 2 catalogs of space objects. The Combined Space Operations Center at Vandenberg is part of Space Command. It maintains the space catalog and operates the space surveillance network. I said 2 catalogs. A published catalog, which includes most objects measuring 10 centimeters or larger. It also has an unpublished catalog that includes hard-to-track smaller objects. And this anti-satellite test was not, and repeat, not a NASA test. So the Wyon commentator was unfair to link Bridenstine to that event. Before the USA-193 anti-satellite action, the United States Space Command claimed that all of the debris would re-enter the atmosphere within 40 days of the 2008 February the 21st event. In fact, it was 1.5 years before the final piece of debris decayed from orbit. That was on 2009, October the 28th. So, we leave you, dear listener, to decide for yourself whether you agree with Jim Bridenstine or with Wildis One News. By the way, Wyon is owned by Z Media and is available in Canberra on Transact Channel 251. Meanwhile, here in Australia, the Australian Defence Forces are keeping a close eye on the situation. 1 month before the destruction of Microsat R, retired Air Force Marshal of the Royal Australian Air Force Active Reserve had these comments about Australia's space situational awareness projects.
Let's talk about space situational awareness first. The Space Awareness Program covers a number of projects in the timeframe of 2018 to 2033 and be an investment of around $1 billion to $2 billion. Under Joint Project 3029, Phase 1, we've relocated a C-band surveillance radar to Harold E. Holt Naval Communication Satellite Station near Exmouth. And we're in the process of relocating the Space Surveillance Telescope there as well, and that's Phase 2. These assets are US-owned, operated by Australian personnel, and jointly sustained and tasked. Joint Project 9351, ADF Space Surveillance Capability, will acquire various space surveillance sensors for the ADF. Sensors are likely to consist of a number of different complementary types. This may include optical, infrared, laser ranging, passive or active radar, space-based sensors, and other emerging sensor technologies. An operating capability is planned in the 2024 to 2025 timeframe. And importantly, Capability Sustainment Group currently has a request for information on AusTender, seeking submissions regarding Australian industry and academic space situation awareness capability. Joint Project 9350, Space Situational Awareness Mission System, is a project to fuse and analyse data from various SSA sensors of different types. Outputs will include updated space object orbital parameters, space object identification data, and collision alert services. The Space Situational Awareness Mission System will aim to be interoperable with the United States and partners, and we're looking for an operational capability around the 2024 to 2025 timeframe as well. Joint Project 9352, radar replacement, seeks an end-of-life replacement for the current C-band radar and a continuation of other space sensor capabilities. The project is still in definition phase and is exploring Australian options for an operational capability in the 2029-2030 timeframe.
And the United States' early warning and surveillance network detected the Indian anti-satellite missile launch. Lieutenant General David Thompson is Vice Commander of the Air Force Space Command. On March the 27th, he told a United States Senate committee that his command had immediately started providing notification to satellite operators. Over in the United States, moves are underway to open up the Department of Defense space catalog to the civilian arms of government and industry. Wilbur Ross is Commerce Secretary and a few weeks ago spoke of the role of the Commerce Department in space situational awareness.
Under SPD-3, Commerce Department is also assuming responsibility for space situational awareness and space traffic management for commercial space satellite operators. I recently spent 2 days at Vandenberg Air Force Base meeting with General Jay Raymond, commander of Air Force Space Command, with the 18th Space Control Squadron and our allies at the Combined Space Operations Center. At Vandenberg, we discussed the need for automation and new technologies to track space debris, especially objects smaller than 10 centimeters, and to be more precise in forecasting conjunctions. Our Office of Space Commerce also is working with industry to enhance access to DoD's authoritative catalog of space debris. We will be the liaison to industry and will deploy a cloud-based open architecture data repository to enhance safety for all space operators. We welcome the contributions of our allies in this endeavor, especially their commercial entities. And toward this end, we will co-host with the State Department an International Space Enterprise Summit with our allies in Washington in late June to discuss these and other issues related to the growing global space economy. Commerce continues to work well with the U.S. Strategic Command, the Air Force, and our friends throughout the DoD and the interagency as we advance the President's SSA-STM mission. By this summer, we will deploy full-time commerce staff at Vandenberg to learn from and work alongside the CSPOC.
As we have already indicated, the United States is not the only country to maintain a catalogue of trackable space objects. Australia is fast becoming a world leader in this vital activity. Craig Smith is Chief Executive Officer of EOS Space Systems, which is based in Canberra. He recently had this to say to the Space Industry Association of Australia when visiting Melbourne.
My name's Craig Smith from EOS Space Systems. Just to put into context, EOS has two major divisions, a remote control weapons station division and a space systems division. Ben is the CEO of the group, and I'm the CEO. I run the space systems group. EOS has been in the satellite tracking and space surveillance business for 35 years since the company was created. And we're best known, I think, for precision laser tracking, accuracy of up to a down to a millimetre, ranging accuracy from LEO all the way through to GEO, and increasing powers, everything from low power laser ranging system for terrestrial battlefields all the way up to high power laser ranging systems. Perhaps less known is that we build some of the most sensitive and most accurate passive sensors for space situational awareness, and we have recently been building our own network. We have a station at Mount Stromlo with a number of telescopes, and in cooperation with a partnership with Lockheed Martin, we have another station built out in Learmonth, and building our own network and acquiring large amounts of space surveillance tracks. So we're now, as Ben mentioned this morning, getting something like 12,000 tracks a week. With all that data coming in, you've got to put it somewhere, so we build our own catalogue, we do our own orbit determination, conjunction analysis.
The Indian anti-satellite test was announced by Prime Minister Narendra Modi in both a series of tweets to the internet and in Hindi on television. The chairman of the Indian Defence Research and Development Organisation is Dr. Satish Reddy. He was the chief architect of this anti-satellite test. He said that the first discussion on the test started in 2014 and a formal presentation was made in 2016. It then took 2 years to develop the system. He said the major challenges in the mission were to achieve a hit-to-kill against a live satellite with an accuracy of less than 10 centimetres. About 150 scientists had worked around the clock in the past 6 months. Now, Indian officials have claimed that the debris from MicroSat-R will quickly re-enter the Earth's atmosphere and burn up. For example, Reddy said in early April that some of the debris had already decayed. He added, and I quote, "Our simulations show all debris will decay in 45 days. Now, others have their doubts. For example, Dr. Tony Phillips, who runs the Space Weather website and has been a long-time contributor to the space show, is one of those doubters. He reminds us that the Sun goes through an 11-year solar cycle, where radiation from the Sun reaches a peak, then 5 years later sinks to a minimum. At maximum, the Earth's upper atmosphere is heated and expands. This increases the drag on satellites in low Earth orbit, causing them to quickly re-enter the atmosphere." And that, of course, is what happened to Owen Garriott's home, Skylab, when the solar activity increased and the drag brought Skylab down over Western Australia. Now, at solar minimum, the opposite is true. Now, this year is solar minimum, so our atmosphere has shrunk. This is good news for those operating satellites in low Earth orbit. Their craft will remain in orbit for longer. But it is bad news for those folks trying to dodge the debris from this Indian satellite, MicroSat-R. Even worse, this year, the temperature of the thermosphere is close to a space age record low. That means that some of this debris will remain in orbit for many years to come. In other words, the debris from MicroSat-R might not decay from orbit as quickly as Indian government officials have claimed. Once again, dear listener, we leave you to decide whose claim you are going to accept. We also leave to your belief system to wonder, firstly, whether MicroSat really are sorry, whether Microsat R really was an imaging satellite. Secondly, whether it was defunct, as claimed by India's Prime Minister. Whether this satellite was simply orbited solely to be a low-altitude target for the anti-satellite test. Remember, Sathi Reddy said this test had been many years in discussion and 2 years in active development. Well, this afternoon I searched the United States Space Command's publicly accessible catalogue of space objects. It lists 59 objects associated with the 2019-006 series. Take out the PSLV rocket stage and its attached student Kalamasat satellite, and that leaves 58 catalogue fragments of Microsat R. Now, here again is what Brandon Stein said 2 weeks ago.
Here's what we know about the most recent direct ascent anti-satellite test that was done by India. We know that we have identified 400 pieces of orbital debris from that one event. That's what's been identified. Now, all of that cannot be tracked. What we are tracking right now, objects big enough to track, we're talking about 10 centimeters or bigger, about 60 pieces have been tracked. In other words, they've got a tracking number, and we're able to keep up with where they are. Of those 60, we know that 24 of them are going above the apogee of the International Space Station.
Now, elsewhere, the United States Air Force said 250 pieces. Now, I've done an analysis of the apogees, or high points, of the objects' orbits. Remember that the original orbit was at an altitude of 274 kilometers. Of the 58 catalogued pieces of debris, four of them have apogees of less than 300 kilometers. A further 11 objects reach no higher than 400 kilometers above the Earth. Today, the International Space Station has a perigee of 408 kilometers and an apogee of 410 kilometers. In other words, the space station is in an almost circular orbit. Almost all of the debris from Microsat R has a perigee of between 200 and 280 kilometers. Nine of the fragments have apogees between 400 and 500 kilometers, 22 of between 500 and 1,000 kilometers, 7 between 1,000 and 1,500 kilometers, and 4 of them are between 1,500 and 2,000 kilometers. One object, catalogued as 2019-006AR, orbits as high as 2,017 kilometers. And that same object has a perigee of 280 kilometers. In summary, Jim Brandenstein needs to worry about 43 of these 58 objects as risky to the International Space Station. True, the risk is low, but it is not negligible. However, it must be said that the Indian debris is not the only orbiting material that crosses the path of the International Space Station. Now, mention was made of the infamous Chinese anti-satellite action. Now, Fengyang 1C was a weather satellite that was launched on 1999, May the 10th. The 750-kilogram craft was in a polar orbit at an altitude of 865 kilometers. Now, a polar orbit is one that travels over the Arctic and Antarctic, so it covers the whole globe. Satellites this high normally remain there for 100 or more years. On 2007, January the 11th, China fired a missile at Fengyang 1C, smashing it to smithereens. Soon after the explosion, more than 2,000 pieces had been officially catalogued, with estimates that there were, in addition, 150,000 particles in orbit. By 2016 October, the catalogued objects were 3,438, of which 2,867 were still in orbit. Well, this afternoon, I counted the public space catalogue. 3,447 fragments of Feng 1C have been added to the catalogue. Counting how many are still in orbit would be a very time-consuming process, but one expert says that more than 570 have decayed. Much of this debris will remain in orbit for decades or even centuries. NASA's Orbital Debris Program Office has estimated that 30% of the debris would still be in orbit in 2035. Now, we're going to hear more about Australia's role in space situational awareness in future space shows. I'm Andrew Rennie for The Space Show.
Hi, this is Mark Holden, and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.